Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanandi. Not received the open book topics for this section? Anyone who needs them, who did not receive them? Anyone else need the open book topics? It's also online. www.iscon.net/eu. So if you need it, it's also online, official website. Should do an India tour website as well. For the India tour?
Yeah.
Maybe just do something and then I'll start getting you information. Start getting something to you. And get back to me. Okay, so, does anyone remember what we've discussed in the previous classes? All of the children get settled. Huh? All of you kids, settle down. Sit down. Huh? Settle down. Okay.
We started with a question from
that's a good. Maybe if everyone could please move forward just a touch, just to create a little more room. Any other points? Okay, so tonight we're going from verses 25 to 33. Now these are one of the key memory verses is in this section, and these are very important verses. It's a very important section. Everyone settle down really quickly. So, some very important verses are in this section, and the section itself is very important, right? Because it will give some very important instructions, which will be coming from the Bhagavatam itself. So we'll begin with verse 25. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller. The Supreme the supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy.
Because of being covered by material bodies, the conditioned soul, including even greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayer and affiliation? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, non-different from himself. Since everyone has a material bodily conception of life, if Krishna has such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies. But since Krishna does not possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually conscious and blissful. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha. His form is eternal, blissful knowledge. Satchitananda Vigraha, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa and Kaivalya are the same.
No, that's good. So what are the points in this opening paragraph?
In Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, I think from section 55 to 72, talks about a person called Sitabhas. His source of happiness is himself. The self, the soul himself, his happiness comes from within. So Krishna is fully spiritual. So he doesn't require an external thing for him to be happy. He does not depend on anything else. We depend on an external object for being happy. So that is it. Because he is fully spiritual, he is self-satisfied. And then he is not affected by any of this.
Good. Anything else?
Because he spiritually doesn't have the problems of material matter.
Good. Any other points? So in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said, Brahma, Pramada, Vipralipsa, Karana Patava, Asha, Vigya Bhakye, Nahidosha, Esaba. So it means that everyone just settle down, right? I can't do this class if kids are walking around and everything. So just get everyone settled from the beginning. Okay. So, it is said that the conditioned soul has four defects, which are imperfect senses, illusion, making mistakes, and cheating propensity. Now we can say that in the beginning, the conditioned soul is in illusion. Illusion means he thinks he is the body, or he misidentifies matter and spirit. He thinks he is something material as opposed to spiritual. Right? So because he is thinking like that, then his senses are imperfect. So we are in illusion, and from our illusion comes imperfect senses. Now, if you have imperfect senses, that means you will commit mistakes. And in order to cover up your mistakes, then you will cheat. So these are the four defects of the conditioned souls. But, Ashavigyavaki Nahadosha Esaba. In the words of the liberated personalities, the sages, the personalities who are speaking in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no defect in their consciousness. There was no defect in their words. Just like there was no defect in Krishna. Because Krishna is liberated from the material energy. So therefore, there is no defect in anything that Krishna does or says. And similarly, one who follows Krishna, there is no defect. You see, the example of Srila Prabhupada himself, there is no defect in what he does and what he says. Because he's perfectly following Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada wore glasses. So, one of Prabhupada's disciples actually said one time to Prabhupada, I think this is in the very early days of his ISKCON, that if you are a pure devotee, then why do you need glasses? And Prabhupada said, this is material. There is no defect in the consciousness of the pure devotee. And similarly, Srila Prabhupada said that sometimes he would ask while he was giving lecture, he would say, what is that shloka? He would ask one of the disciples, what is that shloka? So later on, a disciple, he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, if you're a pure devotee, then how can you forget the shloka? Prabhupada said, that is material. So it's just the material covering of the pure devotee. He may have a body which he is accepting, which he is using in Krishna's service. So in one sense, it is a material body because it's fully used in Krishna's service. It becomes fully purified. But still, there are limitations on that material form. Whereas with Krishna, there is no limitation because Krishna's form is completely spiritual. So in Krishna's words, there are no defects. In Krishna's activities, there are no defects. And in the liberated soul, there are also no defects. If we apparently see defects, that's just an apparent defect based on our vision of seeing the material form. But in the consciousness, there is no defect. Any points? I think it's in the Adi Lila. When Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is explaining Krishnas to Bhagavan Swayam, when he's explaining that verse, then he writes another verse where he says there are four defects of the conditioned soul. Any other points? Okay. So in the second paragraph, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the Paramatma is unaffected by this material world. The Paramatma may be within our heart, and it is said within the Bhagavatam, he is like he is 6 inches tall. Situated within our heart, like that. But because he is in the material body, doesn't mean he becomes affected by the material energy. He's always aloof. And factually speaking, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, all of us are aloof from the material body as well. Even though our Atma is presently within the material form, within the material body, we are not actually affected by the material energy. In the sense, we are not contaminated by the material energy. We are just situated within this body. But the soul always remains pure and separate from the material body. But, because we identify with the material body through false ego, then we appear to be contaminated in our consciousness. Because of false ego, mind and intelligence, which are contaminated, then we appear to be conditioned or contaminated. Material desires appear to be there within the consciousness. But factually speaking, there are no material desires in the pure consciousness of the living entity. It is only because we are situated in this material body and we misidentify with it, then it appears that we are acting in a particular way. But when we become liberated from this dream, then we will act in our original consciousness, which is to serve Krishna and to give pleasure to Krishna. So even though the soul and the Paramatma may be within the material world, but they're not affected by the material energy. Then, in the third paragraph, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna is reciprocating with everyone as they desire. So you'll see in this particular verse, it is said that there are enemies and friends. So Krishna reciprocates as you desire. Yaya tamam prapajyante tam sataiva vajamyaham. As you desire, then Krishna will reciprocate. If you want to treat Krishna as an enemy, Krishna will reciprocate like that. If you want to treat Krishna as a friend, then Krishna will reciprocate like that. So that is Krishna's reciprocation according to our desires. But factually speaking, Krishna is only reciprocating because we have a particular desire to reciprocate with him in a particular way. But he doesn't see anyone as friend or enemy. Krishna just sees that everyone is his servant. But some of the servants are acting in maya at this point in time. So it says in the Svetashita Upanishad, Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavad Gita, just like the bird is watching the activities of another bird. So the Paramatma, the Supersoul, is watching all of our activities in this material world, but he is neutral. He's just watching, he's just an observer. And he sees what we do in this material world. But he does not see that this person is a friend or this person is an enemy. He just sees that this person is in illusion. One of the birds, at this point in time, is attracted by the fruits of the tree or the material energy, and he's forgetting me. So he sees like that. But he doesn't feel any animosity towards us. He's just thinking, well, you are absorbed at this point in time in the material world, but when you're ready to turn back towards me, then I will reciprocate with you. So Krishna himself has no ill feeling towards anyone. So, any points so far? Yeah.
I heard a lecture where it said that Krishna reciprocates to the non-devotee through the law of karma and to the devotee directly. Either way he reciprocates. And through the law of karma he reciprocates to ensure justice and for the devotee through mercy.
Krishna is neutral in to the jiva, but what happens when a jiva offends a devotee, like as we see Prahlad Maharaj was offended by Narasimha, by Hiranyakashipu, and Narasimha Deva was really angry. So at that point, obviously Krishna is not neutral, right? So what is the situation at this kind of, because it's contradicting again.
Just like if you're a very advanced devotee, someone may offend you, but you don't take offense. But if someone offends Dhruv, right, then you automatically become very emotional and you'll be protective like that. So in the Srinadev, Krishna, then he also feels like that. For himself, there is no difficulty. But when someone offends a devotee, then he becomes ferocious. Okay, so that is natural. Because he's a person, so it's natural. Any other point? Yeah, it's already explained at the end of the sixth canto that Vritrasura, or Chitraketu, he could have counteracted the curse from Parvati, but he chose to accept it. So he wasn't forced to accept that curse. But he saw that as Krishna had some desire to fulfill. Just like Parikshit Maharaj also was cursed, he could have counteracted that curse, but he saw Krishna had a plan to fulfill. So, in the same way.
The last line here is confusing. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of luxury, and when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to the body. Why I am not understanding, because the Lord does not force his love on anyone. That's also what we have heard before. And desires to ignore Krishna or to blaspheme Krishna, then he puts them more under the influence of the material energy. He gives them a bhogana. So how do we understand this statement in that context?
What was that last part that you said? Just the last sentence that you said.
The last part, my understanding is that he gives forgetfulness to the soul. He doesn't forcefully make the soul suspect.
Yeah, but, okay, it's like, once again, we understand Krishna's psychology by understanding a parent's psychology. So the parent is chastising the child only for the child's benefit. Right? But it's out of love. That's the motivation. So similarly with Krishna, he does make us suffer in the material world, but that is only because he wants us to come back to him. So he's speeding up the process like that. That's it. So, any other points? Okay. Therefore, by enmity, or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desire, by all of these, or any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. Lila Maya, would you like to read this?
From this verse, one should not conclude that because Krishna is unaffected by terrible prayer or unfavorable blasphemy, one should therefore blaspheme the Supreme Lord. This is not the religious principle. Bhakti Yoga means Anukulina Krishna Anusiran. One should serve Krishna very favorably. This is the real injunction. Here it is said that although an enemy thinks of Krishna unfavorably, the Lord is unaffected by such anti-devotional service. Thus he offers his benedictions even to Shishupala and similarly inimical conditioned souls. This does not mean, however, that one should be inimical towards the Lord. The test is given to be the favorable execution of devotional service, not purposeful blasphemy of the Lord. This is said. Nindam Bhagavadha Savant Tat Parashya Vanashya Tato Napaiti Yashoti Yati Ada Pusat Achyuta. One who hears blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotees should immediately take action or should leave. Otherwise, he will be put into hellish fire perpetually. There are many such injunctions. Therefore, as a regulatory principle, one should not be unfavorable towards the Lord, but always be favorably inclined towards him.
Thank you. So what are the points in the first paragraph?
It doesn't encourage being an enemy of Krishna. Even though you can consider it, it says that if you are an enemy of, Krishna, it is more concentration rather than being a friend of Krishna.
Any other points?
Blasphemy is not a favorable act. That's not how you build a relationship, not only with the God, not only with God, but with anyone else. Even with blasphemy.
Anything else?
Normally we say that it comes unfully, but we have to be there for now. Say that the result is same, which is contrary to normal understanding.
Yeah, that will be explained in this section, why he says that and why that conclusion is given.
It's actually from the point of from Krishna these things come for us, we should follow proper things. But for Krishna it doesn't affect because it's transcendental. Whether somebody is thinking in a favorable or unfavorable way, for him it doesn't affect. But for us, we should not think that, oh, it can go anywhere, it's okay, that's not like that. For us, the intention is there, and it's going in a Krishna, that way only. But for Krishna, it doesn't affect, so that we should not. In the beginning of the purport, it says that because it doesn't affect Krishna, we should not.
Being indifferent is worse than being inimical. Because if you're indifferent, you don't remember it. But being inimical, you can remember it. And remembering him is more important.
Especially in this pastime, this specifically, it is like that. This little later Vena example is also given in none of these ways, so we do not know that. But so the five ways that is mentioned here is. So in these five ways, you can convert something.
Yeah, it will be. Describe, there are five ways which are being described here, how to approach them. So.
Actually, what is the first point of being inimical of the same effect? So, in which category would Maya
be? That comes up in a few verses, yeah. They're also covered.
And it also says that the absorption one has in enmity and wisdom is more than the, this is because of the humility of Narayana.
Yeah, it'll be covered. Your confusion will be alleviated in this section. Prabhupada does. He answers all these points in this section.
The Namavasa leads to the liberation.
Yeah, these points will also be answered. This section answers these points. Yeah, once again, this will be explained. This specifically, the Mayavadis are the ones who do not get the benefit. Prabhupada will explain that in this section, like that. So, first of all, the definition of bhakti, the most perfect definition of bhakti is given by Rupa Goswami himself. Anyabhilashita shunyam, jnanakamadhyanabhritam, anukulyena, krishnanushilanam, bhakti uttama. So, bhakti must be anukul, to satisfy Krishna, to please Krishna. If we are pratical in our attitude towards Krishna, pratical means unfavorable. If we say unfavorable things, or do unfavorable things, or think unfavorable things, then it is not possible to achieve bhakti. It is not possible to achieve Krishna, generally speaking. Like that. One must have a favorable attitude towards Krishna. This is called anukul. So when devotion is done with that attitude, that Krishna, this is only for your pleasure, then we become dayabhak. Dayabhak means it becomes our rightful claim to go back to the kingdom of God. This is explained by Lord Brahma, that if one does bhakti, but under any circumstance, he simply keeps within his heart, he continuously offers obeisances to Krishna, and we always keep a favorable attitude towards Krishna in our devotional service, then this becomes the cause of our liberation from this material world. We're no longer in the material world because we're just blissfully engaged in Krishna's service. So this is a very advanced level of devotion that will always be favorable towards Krishna in all circumstances. But bhakti, in order to be effective, it must be anukul. It cannot be pratikul. Right. Now, it is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here that there are two types of ways of, this is a technical point and a little esoteric point, but it is mentioned in the commentary on this verse by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says that normally when you are criticizing Krishna, then that is pratikul. But he says in the case of the gopis, they also criticized Krishna, but it was anukul. But he said their case is exceptional. In other words, he quotes verses from the Bhagavatam itself where the gopis were critical of Krishna. Right? And when Radharani is speaking to the bumblebee, right, I think in the around about 46, 47 chapter of the 10th canto, then she is saying to the bumblebee, I don't even want to hear the name of this person. I don't want to see the form of that person. I don't like anything which is black. Right? I don't have, so she's speaking like critically towards Krishna. If we speak like that, it is pratikul. You know, if you start saying, I don't want to hear anything about this person, Krishna. You know, I don't want to see anything black like that. Yeah, that's for you, that's pratikul. But for the gopis, even though their words are critical of Krishna, but it is anukul. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that's an exceptional circumstance. It's not to be followed or imitated. None of us can imitate the position of the gopis. No. But generally, bhakti must be anukul. It must be done with a favorable intent. And if you have an unfavorable intent, then it is pratikul, right? And then it will hamper your bhakti, right? Generally. Now, the point which is being made in this section of the Bhagavatam, because this is a very important section, this section we're doing tonight, is that everyone becomes purified by meditating upon Krishna. So even though Shishupal was inimical and envious towards Krishna, because he was absorbed in Krishna constantly, he became purified. Just like in 1968, the Prabhupada was in San Francisco, and across the road from the temple, there were some envious neighbors. Who did not like the Hare Krishnas. Our movement was only just beginning in America at the time. So they put up a big notice board in front of their house, and it said the Hare Krishnas are this, and the Hare Krishnas are that, and these people are this, and they are that, and the Hare Krishnas. So then Prabhupada pulled up in the car to come and give his evening lecture in the temple, and all the devotees were on this side of the street, and the board was on the opposite side of the street, just straight opposite the temple. And they were trying to distract Prabhupada so he wouldn't see the board, because they thought Prabhupada would be very upset if he sees Hare Krishnas are this and Hare Krishnas are that. So Prabhupada got out of the car, he looked at the devotees, and then he turned around and he looked at the board. And he read the board. And the devotees were all silent, and they said, Prabhupada, what do you think? Like that. And Prabhupada said, it is very good. Because they're saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So they're becoming purified because they're constantly chanting the holy name of Krishna. So even when someone is focusing on Krishna in an inimical way, because Krishna is all pure, you get the benefit, you get the effect. It's like if you are facing the sun, right? Whether your attitude towards the sun, you're thinking, oh, the sun is giving me nice energy. So you have like an anukul or a favorable attitude. Or whether you're thinking, oh, the sun is burning me, it's too hot. Either way, no matter what you're thinking, you're getting the effect. Right? So similarly with Krishna, when you're focusing on Krishna, whether you are inimical, favorable, or unfavorable, because Krishna is ultimately pavitra, he is pure, then you are getting purified. So even when the non-devotees, they are saying, these Hare Krishnas are like this and these Hare Krishnas are like that, but they are getting purified because they're chanting the name of Krishna. And the name of Krishna is all-powerful. Abhinitvam nama namano. It is none different from Krishna. And it purifies their consciousness. So, Prabhupada points out in the paragraph, he said at the end of the paragraph, he said, but a devotee should not hear blasphemy. We should not encourage people to blaspheme. And if someone is blaspheming, we have two options. Either we defeat them, or we leave that place. Or I think some places it's mentioned you may also cut out their tongue. Right, if someone's blaspheming Krishna, then I think they're the three options that you have. Cutting out the tongue will get you in trouble. But you can defeat the person or you leave the place. But you do not tolerate hearing blasphemy of Krishna. Because if someone is blaspheming Krishna, then they are becoming implicated in Nam Aparad. And also you will become implicated in Nam Aparad. Because one of the offences against the holy name is to preach to a faithless person. So if you are still preaching and you're tolerating what the person is saying, and you are encouraging them by staying there, and they are continuing to blaspheme Krishna, then you become implicated and they also become implicated with that. Now in the second paragraph, Prabhupada points out that when we chant the holy name of Krishna, it must be with rapt attention. So that's what we're talking about. Now, normally, if someone blasphemes Krishna, right, they get the benefit that they're chanting Krishna's name, but they're not really becoming fully purified. Where in the case of Shishupal, it was different. But Shishupal's level of meditation was far different to someone who walks past the Harinam party, for example, on the street. Someone walks past and someone derisively says, oh, the Hare Krishna's, or shouts at us, hey, you Hare Krishna, or like that. That's different to Shishupal. Shishupal was thinking of Krishna all of the time. So it's a different level. Now, Prabhupada points out that when we chant the holy name, if you want to get the benefit of the chanting, you have to chant with rapt attention. It means you have to be fully absorbed in the chanting of the holy name. Right? And that's when you get the ultimate benefit. This is actually what Shuddhanam is. Shuddhanam means you are absorbed in your chanting. So this is how we get the benefit. Just like you see in this example, it says in the verse, and it will say in the verses which are coming up, that the devotees in the verses that are coming up, they're absorbed in Krishna in different ways. But the point is that it is absorption. Unless one is absorbed in Krishna, then one does not get the full benefit. So Prabhupada is pointing this out. If you want to get the benefit from the chanting, if you want to get the benefit of Krishna consciousness, if you want to get the benefit of your sadhana, of chanting the holy name of Krishna, you must become absorbed in the holy name. Not just chanting, like I see sometimes the devotees walking around the temple chanting, but not really, the mind is not there. And then those same devotees, they come and they say, oh, I'm having so many problems. Of course you're having problems, because you're not hearing the holy name. A devotee who is absorbed in chanting the holy name, in the sound vibration, he does not have problems. Because he's taking Nama Shraya. He's taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying this, we must hear the holy name with rapt attention. Then it is mentioned that a devotee can approach Krishna out of fear. Right? Now this is something that applies to all of us, because sometimes we will find ourselves in fearful situations. Just like I experienced that, 3 or 4 years ago when I had that car accident. Even though I don't remember it, but I was in a very fearful situation at the time. And I took shelter of Krishna. Because it is natural when you're in a fearful situation, you take shelter of God. Because nothing else can save you. That's natural. So that is good if we are in a fearful situation, if we take shelter of Krishna. That is anukul, that is favorable. Right? Now, the more esoteric example, once again, is the gopis, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur himself is a manjari. So he's continuously giving the gopis as an example, especially in this section, because it actually mentions the gopis in this section of the Bhagavatam. So he says that the gopis, they were meditating on Krishna out of fear also, because they were very scared about their elders in Vrindavan, because they left their homes in the middle of the night. And they took, they were absorbed in Krishna and they took shelter of Krishna, but they were very fearful. Because they knew when they went back to the Vrindavan, to their town, they could be heavily reprimanded. They could even be rejected by the village, which is a very heavy thing. I remember Madhavananda Prabhu was telling in his lecture last year at Govardhan. He was saying that one time he was preaching in Bengal, I think it was, or Orissa. He was doing a program. And then after the program, in the village, he heard one woman, and she was crying and crying and wailing and making so much noise. So he sent one of the devotees to find out what was taking place. And what had happened is that woman in that village, she had cheated on her husband. And because she had cheated on her husband, she was being forced out of the village by all the elders in the village. Rejected from the village. Like that. And she was screaming and crying like that. But she was being rejected. So the gopis were fearful. Because they could come back the next day, but the whole village could just completely reject them. This is a very high level of. But for us it just means that if our lives are in danger, then we take shelter of Krishna. That's what they did. They took shelter of Krishna, even in fear. We're in fear, but okay, if we're rejected, then Krishna, you have to marry us. You have to look after us. You're our only shelter. So whatever situation we are in life, we have to become absorbed in Krishna. In an anukul attitude, or a favorable attitude. We have to take shelter of Krishna under all circumstances. Then Prabhupada mentions that that even meditating on the devotee of Krishna will deliver one. That even by meditating on Krishna's devotee, just like all of these devotees, which have been mentioned here by Narada, they're meditating on Krishna. They're absorbing their consciousness in Krishna. But Prabhupada says, also, if you meditate on a pure devotee, you will get the same result. And there are statements like this in the scripture, that if you meditate on the pure devotee, you will also go to Krishna. So in these difficult times, we can meditate on Krishna, or if we do not feel we are advanced enough to meditate on Krishna, we can also meditate on the Guru, or Srila Prabhupada, or a pure devotee, and we will get the same benefit. In other words, they will lead us to Krishna. So any points from what we've discussed? Kamsa, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur actually mentions that he also became liberated in due course of time. In the beginning he got that, just like Shishupal gets that in the beginning, but then later on he gets more. Any other? Even there are examples, like Putana is an example. She was one of the demons who came to Krishna, but she immediately went to Vaikuntha and became like a nurse in Vaikuntha, like that. So even some of these demons, they directly get liberated. They even go past Sayuja Mukti. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that some of the others, like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Kamsa, they got Sayuja in the beginning, but from there, then they went higher.
So Putana was others also went back to Vaikuntha, but Putana got direct to Vaikuntha. So why was there, what was the reason for that?
If you want the reason, you have to wait till the 10th canto. Or just read the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on the 10th canto. He explains this thing. So.
So,
regarding the name of the Lord is concerned, the tattva is that we should always, it should always be anukul. But when it comes to lila, then those principles need some extra lila. Then it depends on what gives pleasure to the Lord and the content.
Yeah, that's a large part of it. And also the level of absorption of these demons is the point. Like we said, many people are unfavorable towards Krishna. You know, we meet people who are all the time who are unfavorable. And as soon as you say something about the Hare Krishnas, they become venomous, very envious. But they're not thinking all the time about the Hare Krishnas like that. But these particular demons, that's practically all they were thinking about. Their only consciousness was that. So it's a much deeper level of absorption. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points this out. They're not, you can't compare them to the modern demons, these kind of demons. They're not on the same level of consciousness.
That's all. You mentioned about the pure feeling that you're looking, pure devotee of the Lord, and you think that's
just. Yes. Because your spiritual master is the servant of Krishna. Any pure devotee.
You understand that
you have to speak up.
Requires a tinge of bhakti.
Yep. Well, you could say that's a tinge of bhakti as well, because they're chanting the holy name, so they're thinking of Krishna, that's a tinge of bhakti. Yeah, but then Krishna's not seeing it like that. Because, but this is explained when in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur explains that these persons, Hela, right, these different types of Namavas which are there. So even when someone is chanting derisively, right, or ridiculing the holy name, but that's Namavas, that's not Namaparad. Namaparad means the 10 offences to the holy name. Those people, they're not committing nama parad, but they're committing nama bas, so it's not nama parad. Okay, any other things?
The description of the Lord is the description that
yeah, it's up to him what he wants to do. What that's like. Yeah, it's a different type of absorption. You know, the fact that they're even with Krishna directly, the fact that they're always thinking of Krishna, like that's a very powerful level of absorption. It's not like the modern examples of demoniac consciousness. Narad Muni continued, by devotional service, one cannot achieve such intense absorption in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one can through enmity toward him. That is my opinion. So, I think Chandra Balabhi made this point that Narada is speaking this verse out of humility. It is not that Narada is thinking, you know, Shishupala is better. But he's thinking, I wish that when I'm thinking of Krishna, or thinking of Lord Narayan, I have that much absorption as they do. Because they are so absorbed. But still their mood is practical. It is not amical. It's not favorable. The attitude is not correct. So he's not saying that we should have an unfavorable attitude. That is better. Prabhupada points that out. And he himself, he knows it's not better, but he sees it even more intense. Right? They're just thinking, well, if you really don't like someone, they're coming to your consciousness all the time practically. If you really don't like someone, like within a moment, your consciousness is absorbed in that person. But there's so many people during the day we think about them, but we don't really become attached to them. You know, they come into our mind and they go out. But if you really don't like someone, as soon as that person just enters your mind, your whole mind just becomes absorbed in that person. Right. So that's why he's saying, you know, I wish my mind was like that. Not in an unfavorable way, but just in a loving way. I wish I was just absorbed in Krishna like that. So this is the consciousness that he's aspiring for. So how do we become absorbed in Krishna in that way, in a positive way? Now for us, it takes place through deity worship. That is why it is necessary for devotees to worship the deities. Now Ayanta Prabhu, he was pointing out a number of years ago, I was listening to one of his lectures, and he was pointing out that when you are dealing with the deity, you must learn to treat the deity or understand what the deity is going through is what you are also experiencing at that time. In other words, yesterday was very hot. Like last week, I remember I walked in here and Prabhupada was wearing a beanie. Right? Is anyone wearing a beanie in the middle of summer? Right? So why is Prabhupada... So immediately I took the beanie off. Right? Because I'm not wearing a beanie. And sometimes when I chant in the temple room, I always chant at Prabhupada's end, close to Prabhupada. And devotees are dressing Prabhupada, and sometimes they come over while they're dressing. And they say, Prabhu, should I put the vest on or should I? So I always say to them, look around the room. See how everyone is dressed. Right? And then Prabhupada's from Kolkata, so he'd always dress a little, he's from a warm climate. So he feels the cold a little more than most of us. Right? So in other words, how I am feeling, that's how he is feeling. If I am hot, then obviously he is hot. If I am cold, then he is cold. That is the consciousness. Right? So this is how we should worship our deities, in this consciousness. Just like the Harisori Prabhu, he asked Prabhupada, because Prabhupada said, everything in Vrindavan, all the food is already prasad. As soon as it's cooked, it's prasad. Then Harisori Prabhu said to Prabhupada, then why do we offer it to Krishna? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna is hungry. Are you hungry? Then Krishna must be hungry. That's how we worship the deity. Huh? Not that you have a big tali and the deity gets a few fruits and nuts. Deity gets fruits and nuts, right? And you get the tali. If anything, it should be the other way around. Right? The deity gets the tali, and you can have some fruits and nuts. Right? But actually, the system is that if you are hungry, that means Krishna is hungry. And Prabhupada pointed this out, that when you're cooking for Krishna, then Prabhupada said, he's a 16-year-old boy. What sort of an appetite does a 16-year-old boy have? Right? He is hungry. Voracious appetite. Krishna eats a lot. He's a hungry. He's a 16-year-old boy. Just like Mahanidhi Swami was explaining, that when Krishna takes the rasgullas, he gets the rasgulla and he pops the whole thing in his mouth. Or gets the gulab jamuns and he just, the whole thing. Like that. When Radharani, when she eats, she just gets it very delicately and she just bites off a little bit. Very feminine and very
sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. And there's other words like that. So Radharani just like that. Krishna, he takes the rascals. Yeah, aristocratic like that. Krishna will just take the whole thing. He's very hungry. Mm-hmm. So, Prabhupada said that when you're cooking, he instructed here in Melbourne, he said to the devotees, when they're cooking the 9 o'clock offering, which they'll be cooking around about now, I think Prabhupada said four very large puris for Krishna, very like big puris, or eight smaller puris, like medium size, or 16 small. I think, I'm not 100% on that, but I think that's what Prabhupada said. When you're cooking for Krishna, then like you make sure he gets enough to eat. Even when I'm in the deity kitchen, sometimes if I'm in there and the devotees are making up a plate for the deity, sometimes they only fill the bowl up to halfway or three quarter way. But if I'm there, I always say, fill it up. Right? Because it's not for you, it's for Krishna. Right? And Krishna will eat everything. He's hungry. He's like that. So you put big like that. Right? Whatever you put on the plate, you make sure it's full. Because he's hungry. Otherwise, he'll just ask for more. Otherwise, you'll just be going back and forth the whole time. He eats everything that's in the pot as well. Everything that's in the kitchen, he eats all of that. It's also Mahaprasad. So Krishna, he has a very big appetite. So this is called Seva Abhiman. Abhiman means your concept of Seva. Right? What do you think when you're serving Krishna? Right? I am cold, then he must be cold. So if I am cold, then you dress him appropriately. Just like a Siddha Raja is sending us the pictures of his Gokul. Of his deity. So it is hot weather, so then he's only wearing the singlet or the shorts like that. Then you dress them appropriately. Or on the very hottest days of the summer, then there's Chandan Yatra. You see, in Mayapur, 21 days, Chandan Yatra. Right? Shalagram Shila has a pot of water above him for the whole 21 days, dripping water on him to keep him cool. And the deities, you see, Madhava, whole body is chandan, like that. So that if the deity is hot, then cool him down. If the deity is cold, then keep him warm. Right? That is service. So Prabhupada points out, that is how our mind becomes absorbed in Krishna. Right? Otherwise your mind will not become absorbed. Right?
Chadas.
Yeah. It's personalism. So it means that that's how you become absorbed. Because Prabhupada is pointing out we don't become absorbed like Shishupalas. That is practical. We become absorbed like Narada. That is anukul. But how do you become absorbed? By deity worship. And I know that if you look at the website of New Brajadam in Hungary, and you see that Shivaram Swami, he personally dresses the deities during the week. And one thing I noticed is that when he decorates the altar with butterflies and animals and like that, they're all facing towards Krishna. Generally, when we decorate the altar, we have the animals facing towards us so that we can see them. You know, to make it look, for those who are looking from here towards the deities, then the animals are facing towards us to make it look like it's more scenic. But he doesn't, Shivaram Swami, he turns everything, all the parrots and the butterflies and everything, so they're all looking towards Krishna. Because in the spiritual world, that's what they would be doing. So all these details, this is how our mind becomes absorbed in Krishna. So, any points?
Well, if his body is his future, and our body is just material,
yep.
So how can we compare the two?
Hey, I really don't think that point is hard to understand. Why did Prabhupada say that Krishna becomes hungry? Now, Prabhupada also points out that for someone on our level, how do we become absorbed in Krishna? Because if you read this section of the Bhagavatam, we're talking about very advanced devotional service. Right? The gopis, Narada, right? The Vrishnis. These devotees are very absorbed in Krishna, naturally. So Prabhupada said, how do we become absorbed? Srila Prabhupada says, through meditating on the order of the spiritual master. For us, that is practical. Prabhupada actually says, there's one quote Prabhupada says, don't try to see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. Try to see Krishna through the order of the spiritual master. Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. How is that? Through following the order of the guru. That's how we will see Krishna. And that is absorption. Prabhupada said that. That is samadhi. You know that famous, if you read the Leelamrita, there's that famous pastime where Prabhupada said, I want the Chaitanya Charitamrita completed in 2 months. Right? And then you hear Rameshwar Prabhu, his explanation of what happened. He said it was samadhi. He said for 2 months, all the devotees in the BBT at that time, I think Devamrita Swami was in the BBT at that time, there was like 170 devotees or something. He said everyone was sleeping no more than 5 hours a day for 2 months. And they would just go and take their meals and then immediately just go back to their service. And he said they were just absorbed for 2 months. And he said everyone was in ecstasy because there was nothing else for 2 months. Because Prabhupada put so much pressure on everyone. He said, I want the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months. And Rameshwar thought he was joking. And Prabhupada said impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So Rameshwar was on the morning walk with Prabhupada on the beach, and as soon as Prabhupada said that, then he just left the morning walk, went straight back to the BBT and said, Prabhupada wants this done in 2 months. Right? So they had a 24-hour shift. Devotees working 6-hour shifts every 24 hours. As soon as one lot of devotees left the office, then the other lot of devotees would come in, just rotating continuously for 2 months, like that, non-stop samadhi. So for us, that is our level. Right? We're not on the gopis level, we're not on Narada's level. We're on the level that we just try to absorb ourselves in the order of the guru. Okay.
Srila Prabhupada also said, I have come to the West on the order of my spiritual master.
Yeah. Okay. A grass worm confined in a hole of a wall by a bee always thinks of the bee in fear and enmity, and later becomes a bee simply because of such remembrance. Similarly, if the conditioned soul somehow or other think of Krishna, who is such chit ananda vigraha, they will become free from their sins. Whether thinking of him as their worshipable lord or an enemy, because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies. So Prabhupada does point this out in the purport if you read it. Prabhupada said the enemies, they will attain Suyuja Mukti. So one of the questions the devotees ask is how can this be the same? Because Prabhupada says that the friends and the enemies, they get the same result. But Prabhupada explains here that for the enemies, they get Suyuja Mukti. So it's not the same as going directly into one of the relationships in the spiritual world. But because they are purified from that platform, then these particular demoniac personalities, then from Suyuja, then they gradually went up through the higher levels of devotion. And they actually became pure devotees. So we know in this example, because these are very special people, especially this particular example, Shishupal, he got Suyuja Mukti, but then later he actually got reinstated back in his original position. So he was purified. And other examples are given, like Kamsa. Kamsa also went into Suyuja Mukti, but then later on he also became fully purified. So gradually they will become purified. You don't become one with the Lord's body, but you become one with the Lord's effulgence. So no one actually enters the body of the Lord. They enter the effulgence of the Lord.
So that's the same as Brahma Devaki, and Brahma Devaki are the same?
Same thing.
Same.
Yeah, that's the Sanskrit for it. It's Sayujya Mukti. Okay. Now, they don't lose their consciousness entirely, but they don't feel satisfied in their position. Or it says that they feel satisfied for a long, long time, which could be beyond time in this world. But eventually they will feel we need something more, and then they go back to the material world. And then Prabhupada said they perform philanthropic activities. They become Mayavadis and things like that generally. That's the general understanding. So, the enemies of Krishna are gradually purified. And Srila Prabhupada points out that the conditioned souls in this world, they are also gradually purified. And Prabhupada says in the purport, ISKCON, because Prabhupada says when you join ISKCON, you're declaring war on Maya. So how does Maya fight us? Who is Maya? Right? Her name is Durga. And what is her weapon? Right? It's a trident, three prongs, which we've explained many times. Past, present, future. Adi Baltic, Adi Devik, Adi Atmik. Like that. So many different types of, you know, goodness, passion, ignorance, like that. But then Prabhupada explains that ISKCON, or the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is also fighting Maya. Because we declare war on Maya, we're also fighting with a trident. Right? With book distribution, with prasadam distribution, and with Harinam Sankirtan. Prabhupada said with this three-pronged attack, this is how the conditioned souls are gradually becoming absorbed in Krishna. Gradually they become purified. We just have to keep attacking. Right? Relentlessly. And that's how Prabhupada was. It was relentless. Right? Books were going out everywhere. Right? Devotees were being made everywhere. Right? Temples are open everywhere. Prasadam is distributed everywhere. Right, and the holy name is being chanted every day. Even today, I was with Prabhu Charan. Do you know Prabhu Charan?
Yeah.
When who did the jagya recently? Jai Pataka Swami?
Yeah.
You know, when they did the initiation? He was the Purohit, he was the Pujari who was doing the jagya. So he's my friend. So I saw him today. And, oh, that's right. And then we were walking out, and we had these haircuts. So then the lady said to us, she said, "Are you Hare Krishna?" So I turned around, and then first thing I thought of, she just chanted the holy name. Like that. So this is the attack of ISKCON. Right? We just have to get people to chant the holy name, to take prasad, and to read Prabhupada's books. And then gradually, they will become purified in consciousness. It's like these demons, they become purified in consciousness gradually. Just by constantly hearing Krishna, 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 like that. They become purified. Many, many persons attain liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention may be due to lusty desires, inimical feelings, fear, affection, or devotional service. I shall now explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon him. Okay. So this is the KMV, your first KMV now. My dear King Yudhishthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and other kings by envy, the Yadus by their familial relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have attained the mercy of Krishna. Now the first point that Prabhupada makes, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes, is that the gopis became pure by lusty desires. Right? But it is not the lust like the lust in this world. Right? Prabhupada says in the purport, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is like the difference between gold and iron. One is completely pure, and the other one is a replica of the original, but it's not the original. So the lust in this world is not the lust of the gopis. It is a completely different thing. What is the difference? Right? Because the gopis' lust is ahoituki, apratihata. There is no motivation. The only thought of the gopis is Krishna happy? And on our level, right, we can also follow the gopis. We can't imitate them, but we can follow them by also having this attitude in our devotional service. Is Krishna happy? Is the spiritual master happy? Are the devotees happy? That's all. That's all we are concerned about. Right? Are the devotees happy with me? Is Krishna happy with me? Is the spiritual master happy with me? And that's it. That's pure devotional service. And that will lead to higher states of consciousness. Right? So, Prabhupada points out in the purport that to destroy lust, it is mentioned in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, to destroy lust, you should hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. Because that transcendental lust will destroy the mundane lust. But you have to see if you are qualified, if you have the adhikar. Because if you are hearing the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna and your lust is increasing, you should stop hearing. But if you are hearing and the lust is going down, then you should hear more. But actually, this is the cure for lust. And ultimately, this is what will take the lust out of the heart. Is by hearing about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. But we have to become qualified. So, it says here that Shishupala approached out of envy, Kamsa out of fear, the Yadus by their family relationship, the Pandavas by great affection, the general devotees by devotional service, the gopis by lust. So, not everyone gets the same position. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points this out. Not everyone gets the same position. Right? Because everyone is coming to Krishna differently. So the gopis, they get the highest position, which no one else can understand. Right? And Narada goes to Vaikuntha. Right? And the Pandavas, they relate with Krishna in a friendly way. Right? And the Yadavas, in a more intimate way. Right? So everyone gets a different relationship with Krishna. And Kamsa and Shishupal, they didn't get immediately, they were not given a relationship with Krishna. It was gradually given to them. So once again, this is Krishna's statement in the Gita. As you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. Right? It's not that everyone gets the same thing. So Prabhupada says earlier, the friends and the enemies get the same result. But we have to understand, within that result there are different levels, and they got it in different amounts of time. So it's not that everyone just got the same thing immediately. Like that. And not everyone got the same level of realization. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or inimically. So, the example is given that Shishupala got Suyuja Mukti, but Vena went to hell. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Mayavadis go to hell. The Brahmavadis, they get Suyuja Mukti. A Brahmavadi is one who does not insult Krishna. But he thinks Brahman is supreme. But he doesn't blaspheme Krishna's form. But for one who blasphemes Krishna's form, a Mayavadi, right, he goes to hell. He suffers unlimitedly. Sometimes it's mentioned they take birth as trees, the Mayavadis, which is a very low birth and a very great amount of suffering. Because what does the tree do? He looks for the light. The tree is trying to reach the light. So what is the Mayavadi doing? Trying to get to the light. So Krishna says, okay, get to the light. Right, go down into that form. Right? And then you'll have another chance, but in a long, long time. Okay. One more verse. Narada Muni continued, O best of the Pandavas, your two cousins, Shishupala and Dantavakra, the sons of your maternal aunt, were formerly associates of Lord Vishnu. But because they were cursed by Brahmanas, they fell from Vaikuntha to this material world. So now we'll begin to hear about the pastime of Jaya and Vijaya. That's already been explained in the third canto, but now we'll hear about this birth as Hiranyakashipu. We already heard about one of them. He took birth as Hiranyaksha, but now we'll hear about the other brother. So it's a very interesting pastime, very powerful pastime. Okay. Excuse me a second. At the farm, you might have seen this poster on the notice board. Gangeshwara Prabhu is doing a Vedic astrology retreat at the farm. So I have many of these posters. If any devotees near where you live, if there are some shops like health food shops or organic vegetable shops or things like that, if you can just come and see me when the class is finished, get some posters and put them up in these places so we can advertise for the non-devotees to come and receive some association like that. Srila Prabhupada ki.